Okay.
Okay, Ryan, you got anything?
November
1st, 2015.
Okay, go.
There you go. Would you mind, I'm going to repeat that just so it's a little louder. This is Operation Mutual Defense Advisory Board meeting for November 1st, 2015. And, first off, I haven't, you know, I wish Tim were here that I could, but I'm sure this will get related to him or I'll relate it myself, but, I'm pretty happy to see a lot of the progress that we've made, and there's a lot of people who've been waiting quite a while for this to come about. At least, definitely since the Bundy Ranch, there's a lot of people who've been paying attention very closely, and sorry about that. And have personally asked why this stuff wasn't moving forward. So I'm glad to see that it is moving forward and that people are taking it seriously. So I appreciate it, and there's a lot of other people who appreciate it. And when we swing into operational status, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more people who appreciate it. So, that's all I had for opening remarks. I guess it'd be, if we can skip the response matrix and we'll go back to that. Let's go to item number 3, Ritzheimer's application, and then, pending our decision on that, we'll go back to the second item. So what's, Dennis, did you have a chance to review his application?
I did.
And have you looked into John at all, seeing what he's been doing and stuff like that?
Yeah, and like I said, I just at some point like to have a chance to chat with him sort of the same way I chatted with Tim a little bit because, you know, the Internet's a wonderful place. There's all kinds of folks and all kinds of things about you.
Okay, so you haven't talked to him personally?
I have not, but I have listened to you gentlemen's opinion, and from what I've seen, and also managed to read a couple of things from him,
mm-hmm.
I would probably go with your judgment. I don't have any reservations, let's put it that way.
Okay. And Gary, where are you at?
Well, let's see. I think a lot of people are trying to pull John into their groups, but John seems to be quite interested in our group, and I think he would be an asset. You know, I've felt that way all along.
Why do you? What? I'm sorry. I'll let you finish before I ask any questions.
He's a drawing card. His name. It's brought attention. Now we've got another item on the agenda that we want him for, and that's Islam. But I see Islam as a serious threat to this country that most people don't see. But I think John is has done a lot in. Dennis, you received that first letter. You haven't received the second one. I had a conversation with John after that, and he realized that it was a little bit off course, and he revised it. And I guess I should have gotten that out to the people. It's not OMD related, but it reflects on John that he's very willing to learn and improve himself, advance himself in the Patriot community. And, you know, that's rare. Most people that have a reputation say, you know, that's it. I'm the top dog now. You listen to me. I'm not going to listen to you. And he's very receptive. Ryan has been too. And so they're willing to work with others, you know. So I think he's ideal. Okay.
Okay. What's your opinion as to why he wants? Was somebody else talking there, or was that background noise?
I didn't hear anything.
Huh. Okay. Why do you think that he's interested in OMD as opposed to some of the other? I mean, because his he's been fairly targeted in his direction. OMD is much more, I guess it's more focused in its purpose, but it's more broad in its view of ideas. and such, I guess. So it's not totally focused on Islam. Why would he be interested in OMD as opposed to continuing to pursue a narrow path?
Well, he's been focused on Islam. His concern is the same as yours and mine and Dennis's, and that is that this country's going to hell rapidly, very rapidly, and I'm apprehensive about the next year where Obama's on his way out and he's going to do as much damage as he could. I haven't researched this one article, but it's about him trying to pressure a town into allowing a Muslim community center to be built where the people don't want it and a unanimous vote against it. Will he broaden out into other areas? I think he will, because the concern is what's happening in America. He just focused on that one point. And as far as Islam, I'm just beginning to focus on Islam because of the numbers of people coming over here. But I think John would pick up anything of interest. I think he could answer the question better than I can, and we can approve him and bring him on and talk to him about that. But I feel that he's a patriot at heart, and he focused, because he was in the sandbox, he focused on the Muslims. You know, they were the ones shooting at him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the Phoenix Mosque has had five bad guys come out of it already, so that became a focus. But he's crossed the line. He's a committed patriot. I believe he is.
All right.
One question, if I could. I haven't seen a copy of his background check. Did he do one through the volunteers?
No, I'm still trying to get the information from... I saw the one that you ran, and that's not mm-hmm. very complete at all. I could do better than that. It focuses on one state for criminal record. $20. You know, I've been doing researching people a lot, and generally you can find more just with what's freely available on the internet than that. But I had sent the question back to Tim about which one of these buttons should I push. Are they different levels? And so I haven't passed it on to Lisa Payne Nager either yet.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty simple based on his directions. But again, it's one of those things that if that's going to be our criteria before we bring someone aboard, well, I just want to see if he's met the criteria, or if we're going to make an exception. And if that's the case, well, then we need to talk about it a little bit.
Well, you got a good point there. But I'm just... I don't know. I didn't think that was a very thorough check. There was a lot of reference, contact here, contact there. That sounds like they're just making money, not doing background checks. And I've seen better reports than that in the past. And maybe we need to look elsewhere.
It looked to me, I went over it, and I see what Gary's talking about, but it seemed to me like, probably because you don't have a record, Dennis, and mine would probably look equally as blank, that there's just not anything to put on there.
That's kind of my thought, because it looks like, and again, from what it looks like it takes a look at my county, and because I've lived somewhere, at least I declared that I'd lived there for enough years, it didn't look elsewhere. And then, of course, it does the national check, and I guess it does the sex offender check, which we're not so interested in the sex offenders, but, obviously the volunteer people are, because that's their number one question they get, is everybody screened to be a sex offender before we let you, around the Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or whatever.
Yeah.
Not our, leaning forward because you're with children thing.
I'd be curious to see someone who does have, a little bit on their record, and just to see what that system put out, if it went into any details or anything like that. That would be the real question. It's going to be hard to gauge it based on people like yourself or mine.
And see, that's where Tim would be invaluable, because I'm sure he's seen some pretty sketchy ones maybe come through that have tried to come down to his area.
Yeah,
sure.
I tried to query him on that. You all saw the email, and I've not heard back from him.
I wonder what he's got going on. myself, I was out of touch for a few days this week. I was on a search and rescue, which was great for the local deal up here, and I'll go into it later. But, yeah, I don't know. And like I said, he didn't answer his phone, so I don't know where that's at. As far as John's background check is concerned, I mean, we're still sitting on Gary, me, and Tim have not submitted ours to the board at this point. I have a pretty I have a comfort with John. We speak well together. We converse ideas well. I guess the only reason that I wonder is, you know, when people gain notoriety so quickly, is why they would be interested in this avenue as opposed to pursuing some avenue that they were already on. Was my only curiosity, and I guess we can ask him about that. As far as it goes, I would say yes to John.
Well, we always have the option if we take him on and we settle how we're going to do background checks. And like I say, I've seen background checks before, and this one is Maker and is referencing, you know, who you can contact and all that. I don't know that it's really doing the search, but, you know, Dennis is a poor subject. He's cleaner than Sky King's kids.
Well,
people might recognize that, Dennis.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it looks at watch lists, it interests me. And like I said, I don't see any reason that Dennis would be on one yet, other than that if they haven't pegged him to these phone calls yet. Certainly, you'll gain that notoriety quickly, I'm sure, once they figure that out. But I guess I need to do it myself. And I was about to do it this morning before the call, but nature called me in before the call. So I'll get mine done today and send it out to you guys, and we'll just see, because there's no doubt that I'm on terrorist watch lists.
Now, when you pushed the buttons there, did you push the top one that just said volunteer?
Yep, I pushed the volunteer one, because otherwise it's volunteer organization, and then you've got to put in the code he gave you in that little thing.
And you didn't have to put that in, though, right?
Oh, yeah, you have to put his code in, because that reports to him as well. He should be getting a copy.
Because
you get access to it, and then he gets a copy of it from, because it's as if you're attempting to volunteer with somebody, like the Red Cross or whatever.
Yeah, so you're saying you want to hit volunteer and not volunteer organization?
Right, because I think volunteer organization is how you set up an organization.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, if you're a volunteer organization, they're going to run a check on your organization for volunteering for something.
No, I think that's how you set up your code, that people can volunteer through them.
Gotcha. Set up the account for them to volunteer for.
Yeah.
Looking at yours, though, Florida, Sarasota County Criminal Search, clear. Is that the only place they check where you're currently living?
Well, they check the county that you're living in, and let me bring mine up here a second here.
It's on page 3.
Yeah, let me bring it up here. They do the sexual offender check, and I think that's nationwide.
Hey, Dennis, I'm going to let you guys talk about this real quick. Let's take a vote amongst ourselves real quick on accepting John Ritzheimer as an OMD advisory board member, and then let's have another conversation about specifically his job on the advisory board after that. So, Dennis, what do you think?
I'll go along.
Okay.
I think
hey, Gary.
Get background on him at some point, but right now I think he's good. And if you guys are good, I'm good.
If we find something, we'll hold a special meeting without him. If there's something bad in there, I won't get it. But I'm for it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm for it as well. Very quickly, now, Dennis, I think Gary has spoken to you as well. Gary and I spoke about bringing John into operations or rather planning.
Yep.
And
I'm good.
That, you like that. So you're, you know, I have probably, as far as an NCO goes, I have a pretty solid foundation in planning, operations orders, and things like that, just because of the nature of our mission. And having to brief generals and such all the time. But given that it was your specialty, or rather your job, for a number of years, I'm assuming the judging based on your DD-214, that, that's something that you can mentor him along with, or do you have material, that he can be supplied with? I know it's easy to give him a Ranger handbook and say, go to the operations order section and memorize, you know, start, going through all that stuff, but what do you think on that line?
I think that when we come down and actually decide to do something, it's going to be more of a kind of a group effort at that point, and we'll go ahead and walk everybody through it the first time. I mean, at some point here, if we get all organized and we get some free time, we can always take and maybe do a scenario and a, you know, a trial run through on something.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't have any problem. I can provide him with some background and some references if he's interested. But this is pretty specific kind of stuff we're going to be doing. And a lot of it's not covered in the standard references, I'm betting.
Right. A salute report is inappropriate to it, for example. It's got to be more complex than that.
Yeah, like I say, so some of this is going to be done on the fly. And, again, I think if we get him on board, and that'll be a good opportunity for me to, you know, chat with him maybe later this week or whenever he's got some time, and we can work from there. But, you know, it's always nice to have another guy.
Okay, I'm going to send an email, tell him to call in then. Are we settling? He's going to take planning?
Yeah, that's fine. I was going to let you guys talk about the background deal a little more, and I was going to give him a call. But if you can send him an email and he's waiting for it, then that's fine too.
Well, I sent him an email, and I prompted him already, asking if he was standing by, and he affirmed that he was, and I just emailed that the phone number and everything to him.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe we need to table the background check until Tim's on board, too, because he's got the most experience with it and seen the most results off it.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds fine. And then I, as far as the operation stuff goes, kind of what I mean is, and you know, it might be something that I'm going to get some personal time with him here at in Northern California, probably the week after this week, and then also I'll be down at Tim's place, so and he'll be there as well. We'll probably get some personal time, and I can go over stuff like, you know, different overlays and such, and how to plan out a mission. I just have a feeling that he's never had any reason to understand things like developing the friendly and enemy situation, what the mission is, the who, what, where, when, why, how the execution needs to be stated, those types of things. So,
well, I thought he spent some time in 4th Tanks.
In what?
In 4th Tank Battalion, the Reserve Tank Battalion for the Marine Corps. Thought that was on his DD-214.
So in your experience, or you were in the Marines. In your experience, what level of planning knowledge would a staff sergeant a sergeant, I think, because when he was a staff sergeant, he was kind of a logistics guy, wasn't he, or something like that?
Yeah.
What level of planning knowledge would they have?
He should have all the basic five-paragraph order stuff. Even if he didn't build a bunch of them, he's seen a bunch of them, or should have, because he was there for quite a while. And particularly, you know, the logistics section of it, if not the ops section. I mean, you know, let's face it, most people, and if you're doing the civilian stuff, it's, you know, the blue people versus the red people. So the intel stuff isn't that important. But if he's doing log, he should be up on all the trafficability overlays and all that kind of stuff. Bridge recons.
Okay.
Should be. I mean, otherwise you're taking bridges, you know, and putting heavy vehicles across them without checking them. And that's usually not a good plan for success.
Sure.
As Dennis said earlier, too, when we have an operation, everybody's going to be involved in it. We're going to have the best ideas from some of the best people in the Patriot community, as far as I'm concerned. And it's just reconciling those and deciding how we're going to go about something. And then, as every plan, it'll be changed as soon as it hits the ground. But
yeah, and, you know, the first time we go through this thing, you know, because we may not execute the first one. You never know how these things work. But I got no problem with working in the background with him and helping, you know, prop him up, and we'll do it together, and we'll just walk, and then he can, you know, travel on behind. And then after that, he can be the lead dog. It'll all work out.
Okay.
Well, he hasn't called yet. Let's see if I can call him and tell him to check his email.
Yeah, it sounds good. I'm kind of putting filler time in here while we, so he can be involved in the rest of the call here. That's going to be interesting to see how that works. And I wonder if, so for instance, I'm sure you're familiar with it, in your capacity, Dennis and Gary was helping to develop the situation paragraphs of the of an op order. Basically, the operations section within our unit took and they put together the friendly and enemy situation, gave us all of the information on your normal information on daylight, nighttime light requirements, all that type of stuff. Sunspots, the effect of communications, and things like that would go into the situation. And then the mission itself, and then the execution was written by the team itself going in. So, for instance, we would be, you know, who, what, where, when, why, long-range surveillance team 3-4 to establish continual surveillance of NAI, named area of interest, 00, whatever. And anyway, we would develop the mission statement ourselves. So anyway, the operations was more or less in charge of, it's the two section that puts together the situation, isn't it? Not operations.
Yeah. And yeah. See, what I'm used to doing is building an operational planning team where you have members of all the communities.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever the facilitator is, generally somebody from the operations of the three. So it doesn't have to be. It could be anybody, depending on what the mission is. I've had guys from the four do it when it was like a NEO operation, non-combatant operation. I've had guys from the two do it when it was mostly a surveillance and surveillance and reconnaissance type thing. Depends on kind of what the thrust of the mission is. And, you know, I've even had the S6 to it, who's the civil affairs, when it was mostly dealing with, you know, host nation and doing one of those things with a hurricane. So, because we had to take and everything had to be cleared through host nation, so it really didn't matter what the hell we planned if the host nation wouldn't allow it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other side of that whole coin is what you guys have been talking about. Basically, it's offensive operations as opposed to defensive operations. However, sometimes the best defense is a good offense. But you know, defensive operations is a key element in this. And
sure.
Oh yeah, and the problem is you just don't have the friendlies and the enemies. You get the third parts too. So you're going to have essentially a black, gray, and white list type thing. You got the guys
yeah.
we think are all good with us. You got the guys who we think are against us. And then the ones that, depending upon how the situation's rolling, could go either way.
well, we got the guys that present themselves as good but may or may not be bad, and then the ones who present themselves as bad guys who may or may not be. It's, yeah, there's all kinds of blurry lines with it. Yeah, you know, and as we're discussing it more, I'm recalling more and more what our operations section did. Our operations section was used a lot more for coordinations and such to help facilitate the operation. If we needed the helo insert with an alternate of striker insert, they're the ones who conducted the initial coordination and then brought them to us, whoever it was that was the leadership of that entity. I know they did that stuff. They also they expanded the overlays. I know they would take our overlays and then take them to the division or the core section, whoever it was that we were working for at that time, and just so that they knew exactly what we were doing and where we were at. So those are some of the things I recall them doing. And then they had a lot to do with, actually our entire training section was within operations as well. We didn't have a separate training
section.
That's pretty
common. Yeah, that's pretty common that operations runs both operations and all the training and rehearsal and, you know, warm-ups to that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and again, it's going to be interesting because you're going to have to take and have essentially a camp commandant, depending upon where you're going to put people, maybe multiple. And the first part of the operation may be mostly them, just trying to get, you know, your logistics in and make sure nobody's dying from bad water or, you know, whatever's going on.
Right.
And then once you're stabilized and up, that's when you can actually begin doing some operations. And you probably had that at the Bundy. You know, your first thing was bring
John.
Everybody beachhead operation and trying, you know, to get them all set up and organized.
John, welcome. This is Gary. Ryan's here, and Dennis is here. Tim is not here.
Okay. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good to meet you.
Good. When I spoke to you the other day, you said you had some questions about OMD and what our purpose was. And I don't know if I answered them, but...
Yeah, you've answered them. I guess in a nutshell, you know, it's. I just want to make sure that I'm being a part of, you know, the right group, I guess. And everything we've spoken about, the their true faces and allegiance and stuff like that, and you know, everything sounds great, and I'm on board for it. And, I just obviously had quite a few people tugging at me like, oh, you should come here, or you should come here, you should do this, or this, or this, and everything just kind of seems like a whack job ordeal, and I've maintained contact with you, Gary, for quite a while since the event I held back in May, and, you know, everything I've read from you and your advice that you've given to me has helped me through things, and I think this is going to be the right choice for me.
Okay, now, Ryan and Dennis, you got any questions of John?
You go ahead, Dennis.
John, this is Dennis. Nice to meet you. What I would like to do is maybe sometime later in the week, whenever you get an opportunity, maybe you and I can chat a little bit and just not tie up the other folks so we can kind of get an idea of each other and begin working together. That sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reason, Dennis is
I don't have anything specific right now.
Dennis has got a very extensive background. He's like me. He's one of the old fuckers in the group. And he's got an extensive background in operations and intelligence. I've got a little in intelligence. And we're all going to be working together. But his experience, I think, will be very helpful. You're going to... I think I spoke to you about you taking the planning seat, which is basically operations. We call it a friendly name, planning. It won't put the entire burden on you, but I think that when we do have to move on something, we're going to have to move fairly quickly, so we all want to be as versed as we can in what the responsibilities that we're going to be the principal on. We're all going to have other people in the second tier helping us and on the first tier. This is the first tier. And but Dennis's background, I think he can brief you on things we've discussed in the past and a lot of what may be going on. Okay, Ryan, did you have any? Or Dennis, you done?
Oh, yeah, I'm done at this time. Like I said, I just kind of like to chat with you a bit, get to know you a little bit, so that when we do have these conversations, we have a little bit better basis to talk.
Absolutely.
Ryan?
So I don't know that my my question necessarily is you kind of already stated, but I asked these gentlemen before you came on when we were discussing whether or not to have you sit on the board, and I'd like to pose the question to you yourself and let you answer it in your own way. What is it about OMB that sparks your interest as opposed to the other entities that I'm sure you've been looking at and have been queried about joining or participating in? What is the particular allure of Operation Mutual of Defense to you?
Well, as of right now, the only thing I have to go off of is the personnel that I see already involved with OMB, and the, I mean, I haven't done extensive background checks on everybody. I don't know everybody that's involved. But just as of right now, the personnel that are involved in it all seem very like-minded. I know you'll never see eye to eye with people 100%, but you know, even yourself, you know, you seem like a very well-educated guy. You seem like you got a level head on you, and we've had a few conversations. And you know, I just want to be able to get more active and be more involved. And I'm not going to try to take on the world by myself, or let alone try to fix our own country by myself. I know you're going to achieve more as a team. And so, again, and I still need to, I mean, me being new, I don't know. I that's why I'm more of like a whiteboard type of guy. I really would like to have somebody just explain the whole breakdown of, okay, if you're a board member for OMB, or, and then what's the other membership type of OMB? What else is out there? And, you know, I need to know what I'm committing to. At the same time, I need to, I'm all for it, and I'm willing to do the work necessary and go out and take initiative. I know I can go out and take initiative to get stuff done. But I got to know my limits too. I also have two daughters that I got to raise, and I can't just hit the, you know, drop of a button, just take off and, oh, I need to go drive over to Florida from Arizona just to go look at, you know, someone getting ready to take their land taken away or something like that. I need to be able to do as much research as I can. And, from Arizona, I mean, this is kind of my safe spot here. We're willing, just because of the freedoms we have, but I'm not afraid to travel or go wherever need be. But I, you know, doing everything I can out of my own pocket, and people are limited. And I've seen a lot of people in these movements that are just broke as hell. They have spent every penny they got on, you know, gear or whatever, and they're not taking care of themselves. So we got to, I got to stay firm on that, keeping that happy medium, keeping my family happy as well, and being there for them. I can't just be gone the whole time.
No, I think if you look at the tier one, the advisory board, us, generally we're the generals that sit back in the safe zone. you know, that basically the duties on the advisory board are a function of communication between the members of the advisory board and making decisions. As far as the background of OMD, it began with OMA, Ryan Payne and Jerry Bruckhart, and one of the problems that developed was with two people that both have a different opinion. You know, it becomes a problem what's approved and what's not approved. And that, and the Bundy Ranch probably demonstrated some other important aspects of it, better coordination, more people involved in decisions, and having a plan when you got there. Ryan did a beautiful job of holding something together that would have been nearly impossible under normal circumstances. Somehow he managed to hold it together. But so the whole idea, this evolved out of Bundy Ranch, and it basically, the tier one is the advisory board. It's the brains of the operation, the generals. The tier two is people who sign on in adjunct positions. For example, I'm public relations, and so the people that are going to be news staff for and have the credibility of OMD behind them will be at tier two under public relations. They might be in other areas as well, but they're basically accredited people, and they cannot speak for OMD unless they're, you know, it's approved for them to speak on behalf of OMD. The logistics, the planning, the intelligence, and all that, that other people will be available. The most important role probably is response coordinator, because he's the one that investigates the job. We do thorough research on the people, determine if they're committed, like Clive and Bundy was, to stand up, or if they're going to give in at the last minute and create an embarrassing situation like Oath Keepers had with Kim Davis in South Carolina. And so the tier two is support staff. Now, then the third tier is the volunteers. They're the people that signed up on OMA and received notice of a call out to go to an operation. And the response, the initial response, and probably the biggest response, was what was generated by OMA, and then the other organizations, Oath Keepers and everybody, picked up on it and tried to make it their show. But it's kind of like a committee of correspondence in that respect. You know, the Boston Tea Party is going on. Come on up here and join the Tea Party. It's an invitation. And so the third tier is just, there's no limitations on that. Everybody in Tier 1 and Tier 2 is going to go through the evaluation process, the application and the 214 if they're military service, and, you know, background checks and things like that. So... but the primary aspect of it, though, is to have a credible organization say there's a problem here, we've looked into it, and we need bodies on the ground.
Right.
And very quickly, Gary, can you, since I know you're sitting at a computer, can you forward John the individual task list, the board agenda for this meeting, and the structure PDF file, the structure PowerPoint presentation?
Yep.
That structure PowerPoint presentation that he's sending you over right now will answer the questions that you just had that Gary kind of gleaned over.
Okay.
And it has specifics as to how things are structured. Ultimately, and I'm going to be very brief, because I want to kind of move this along, and then we can put off our size discussion to the end and get through things in case anybody needs to go do something else. Operation Mutual Defense is a network. It's a network of people who want to defend other people in their lives, liberties, and property. And it's the graduation from Operation Mutual Aid, because with Operation Mutual Aid, essentially the idea was that I needed to get contact, get there, and then put together a team as they came, from whoever came. Now we're trying to take a little more of a preemptive effort and have the team together before we hit the ground, which is obviously a lot better and more efficient, right?
Right.
And so that's the idea. And that's all within the, Gary, if you could include the mission statement in that email too. And so I think that the mission statement and the structure PowerPoint should clarify all those questions for you, and give you a better foundation.
You see, I'm all for doing this and taking on that responsibility. I just wonder if my name hasn't been so slandered and shit on through everything that, you know, that I'm probably the best guy to be making contact with somebody who's facing a land grab, and they, or I mean, as weird as it sounds, like, liberty for all, you know, if it was a Muslim getting their land grabbed and stuff, I would be right there for them to help defend their property, you know, but I don't think they would understand that or see it that way, or that they would want our help. I mean,
well,
I
you can
I
look at
okay
the same thing. I have the same issue. And they're going to, you know, whether or not you're the slander that has come your way is due to your personal actions. I mean, some of those things we bring on ourselves, and we've talked about it a little bit. You know, what the fuck Islam shirt probably was a bad way to go in a presentable fashion, but it got attention, and you needed attention. So it's just hard to say. And those judgments, we can make those judgments better as we grow within these things. And it doesn't, you know, the slander and such, it's going to come no matter what. And now everybody that sits here on this board is going to come under fire immediately as soon as these things start. We're all going to be, somebody's going to be something, whether we're midget rapists or whatever it happens to be, they're going to say everything. You know, I'm a fake ranger as far as it's concerned, everybody on that reads all the crap is concerned, and a federal agent, and I'm sure you're a federal agent. So, you know, your mindset and your knowledge, and the one thing that I look at the most is your determination, your motivation. The fact that you see that things need to change and you're willing to sacrifice your own personal time and possibly your own personal body and life in order to initiate that change, that's the important part.
Yeah.
So the slander's going to come, and it's going to be a lot worse.
The only clean one that doesn't have a bad reputation that's gone public. You know, I was John Doe 4 for many years, a government agent. A lot of people want to believe that shit. But, you know, that's been 22 years I've been that. So. But, again, too, respectability, because a lot of people respect what you did. A lot of people respect what Ryan did. A lot of people respect what I write about. And so, you know, they might not like Ryan or I, but they might like John, so they'll join OMD because John's there, or because Ryan's there, or because Gary's there. So we are looking for people that have really gone into the fire and come out. And you have gone into the fire and you've come out. Ryan's gone into the fire and come out. I've gone into the fire and come out. Dennis is going to go into the fire as soon as we go public.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out.
We'll cook them ourselves.
I'm sure that he'll come out equally strong, but Dennis's background is very much a part of this, and, you know, we're all comfortable with him, and so he's the only one at this point. Naylor's, you know, been in the fire as well. He's a member of the board. He's not available this morning for some reason. He hasn't contacted us to explain why he's not here, but every Sunday at this time we have our meetings, and we try and keep them under an hour. We've failed on three occasions, and
miserably.
We'll have failed on the fourth occasion.
In 3 minutes, we're going to fail again.
Yeah,
we do that a lot.
So, John, do you have any more specific questions to ask of us, or any of us specifically, any issues before we move on with this?
Nope.
All right. One of the things
is, Ron, you have an agenda, and the tasks are the current ones. That you've got a couple other things in there, but if you can check your email and look at those or not, we're going on with the agenda now. Ryan?
Okay, so let me pull up my agenda here. Okay, we're going to we went straight to three. Item number three, we're going to go back to item number two. And as I didn't send you guys the response matrix, I'm going to just go off of it. And I essentially have the response matrix done. I'm doing little things to make it a little more readable. I put in a ton of information, and I just want to have it presentable. So as far as we've got the side note, I'll just start off with the Bundy Ranch. We're still sitting there with those logistical capabilities and the desire of Mr. Bundy to host an operations base should that become necessary. When I get down there, I was actually trying to get down there to go pick up a bumper that's in Mesa that I got waiting for me, but I think I'm going to have to pay the $600 to have it shipped. When I get down to talk to Mr. Bundy, I'm going to have a further discussion with him about maybe co-locating another training ordeal. So he just has a ton of ideas, and he wants to be involved as well in the sense of support, whatever it takes to help us do our job, which is a lot, quite a bit outside of, you know, the position that he's taken publicly, which is we're going to stand on our own two feet and we will fight if you bring the fight to us. He very much is, and the brothers are all very much in the sense of we need to begin to organize in a manner to be able to take the fight to them and still obviously in a defensive manner, but have the preparations and all that. So anyway, we do have a hard sight whenever that comes about. Also on there, we have the Red River situation. I know that as it goes, I've seen some of the articles that have been forwarded around to the board, and that's pertaining to the governor's letters to the BLM and some of the statements that the governor of Texas has made in support of the landowner. I haven't found anything out as far as whether or not there's a physical effort to stand by the landowner, but at least at this point there's a verbal support. So what really needs to happen, and Gary, do you have contacts with those anybody there at the Red River?
Not yet. I hadn't,
okay.
But I agree that if Abbott doesn't do anything and just politicians' words, that we need to be prepared for it. So let me see if I can get contact for Red River.
I know. Well, I know Cliven has contact with him, and a couple other guys do as well. So I have contact.
You want to make contact them? You want to get it from Cliven, or you want me to make contact with him?
Well, I have some information for him as well. I just haven't called him, so I'll get in contact with him.
Me too, and after you speak with him, let me talk to him so I can get some history and start working that up.
Okay, and then I know he's been talking to Jason Van Tattenhove already. So
that's
he's been. Yeah, that's Oath Keepers.
Yeah. Okay.
So I would assume that they probably have already talked to him about some measure of support. And just for your information, John, what basically happened is at the Bundy Ranch, I don't know that I'm necessarily going to say I'm taking credit for it, but it probably was because of our conversation. Stuart Rhodes and I had a conversation where we spoke about the specifics of what Operation Mutual Aid was, and I kind of set him to a challenge and said that, quite honestly, this is something that you should be doing. You have a large organization, you have funding, you have personnel, that this should be something you're doing, but because you're not doing it, now we're doing it. And so immediately after that is when he made the call for Oath Keepers to come to the Bundy Ranch. Since then is when you've seen them kind of, I guess you would say that it's a parallel effort to what Operation Mutual Defense is. And there's a few different ways to look at that. One could be that they're trying to co-opt the movement that Operation Mutual Defense essentially started, or what Operation Mutual Aid essentially started. The other way to look at it is that they just want to do it themselves, and they feel that they have a better way of doing it, and that's fine too. So what they're doing is, and I'm not sure if they're involved in the Finicum part of it, but they're also lining up events. Like, we're going over a response matrix that I put together here. They're lining up events and establishing contacts with people who need defense as well. So that's kind of that situation, and why I mentioned that they're in contact with the Red River guys as well. I don't know if you want to look at it as competition, but at this point, because there's not a relationship between the two entities, in fact, the relationship, just because of the personalities at the leadership of the table are in conflict with one another, then I would say it is competition.
Yeah, obviously I got my opinion about Oath Keepers and the people that head that organization. And, I mean, I was an Oath Keeper. I still am a real Oath Keeper. I'm not, you know, they got a coin on the name and they're profiting off it. I go out and being an Oath Keeper is on your actions. It's not $40 a year. But if it ever came down, I mean, I'm trying to, you know, it is political at this point too, it being on a board, and now we want to be able to work together for a common goal. So, being able to set aside our differences for, you know, a common goal, I don't have a problem with that. I could bite my tongue.
Yeah, and I have sent it up some channels to get to Stuart Rose that I would like to have a sit down. He lives near me. You know, we only live a couple hours apart from each other. I would like to have a sit down and clear up all of the issues and see if we can find some common ground. But anyway, I'm going to move it along from that. I just wanted to give you a little bit of a background so you understood why I was bringing it up. Okay, so that's Red River. I'll make contact with them this week. And I'll have a report for you on the Red River thing next Sunday. And then, Gary, I'll bring you in. In fact, I'll probably, once I have confirmed the number I have for him, I'll just make contact with you on the line. And then would anybody else like to be a part of that conversation?
I don't think I need to be in there to flood the lines, but I would like to definitely, obviously, be kept up to date and posted on it, because I'm sure we will be.
Yeah, everything, Gary will get you an advisory board email. He'll be putting you on the list, and then so every time an email is sent out from anybody else on the advisory board, it goes to all of the members, and then whenever you send a message to the advisory board, it'll go to everybody, so you don't have to paste 10 names in there.
Cool.
That's how we disseminate information, and it's strictly for the advisory board, so we don't want anybody else sending emails through it. And then any pertinent information, you know, for the board as far as decision-making goes or performing the specific disciplines that each advisory board member handles, pertinent information for that stuff should go to that email. So, okay, then, yeah, we'll have an update for that one then this week. Okay, number three I have on there, support for any refugee and processing actions. And I think I'm going to move the discussion on that one to, I think, which is the next item on the agenda. But specifically that one is for the actions that we've discussed. If they start to bring in refugees into any particular state, and whatever entity it is, whether it's militia or just a patriot group that has taken up the task of performing that in processing, we'll call it inserting themselves between the effort to bring the refugees in, infiltrate the refugees, and to where they actually get direct contact with the people. Somewhere in between there needs to be a processing in order to determine their status as to whether we're going to consider them to be a combatant or not, or an actual refugee. And so this part, as far as OMD is concerned, would just apply to what we want to put forth as support for that, whether it's personnel or information or plans. I do have a plan together for it, and I need to talk to you, John, about that at probably on the next item of the agenda. So anyway, I'll leave that one. And I do have two other states that I've talked to. One is Tennessee, and the other is Georgia, that are interested in that specific plan. So we can go over that later. Lavoie Finicum, no updates on him. As far as I know, he definitely still wants to meet with me and us, and is interested in utilizing our capability. Buddha is essentially in the same position. And as far as it goes, to clarify, I know we've had some discrepancy on what exactly it was that he was doing down there, and trying to insert himself in those positions. Buddha will probably take up the same exact position that he did with the Bundys, and that's as the personal security head. Phil Lyman. I haven't talked to Phil since the last time I spoke with him, which is about 3 weeks ago now. And he's in the same situation. I know that from talking to one of the Bundys. And what he's doing, he's awaiting a sentencing. His sentencing was postponed because they had another judge assigned to the case, given the conflicts that they've had with every single judge. He thinks this judge is more reliable, or more trustworthy, rather, than the other two, so we'll see where it goes. But ultimately, John, so you're updated on what that situation is. If you look into Recapture Canyon in Utah, do a little bit of research on that. It was supposed to be the second OMA action. I didn't necessarily use it as a sanctioned OMA event because the other half of the decision makers of OMA, Jerry, was not up to speed on it, and was essentially, my personal opinion is that because he wasn't brought up to speed on it as quickly as he wanted to be, he just kind of flexed his muscle and didn't help activate the network, which all OMA essentially was a network of activation, disseminating information to people. So at any rate, they have this archaeological site down there, and it is in a canyon that a county road runs through. And the BLM has come in and said this is on federal land, and so we're managing it, and thus we're closing this road due to the archaeological site. One of the county commissioners organized a ATV ride through on that county road through the land there and through those archaeological sites. After the ride, the federal government has brought him up on charges of essentially violating a closed road, a federal closed road, and the other one had something to do with inciting or organizing a protest, something along those lines. And so there's been some pretty hefty opposition to him in court by organizations, and so one of the reasons one of the judges got dismissed was because of his ties to one of those organizations. Another judge had ties to the BLM. And this is another Daniel P. Love situation. People have died. People have killed themselves over this whole ordeal. It's been going on for a number of years. The FBI has been involved, and they've raided homes in the area to try to recover artifacts and have made arrests and such. And this was all before OMA involvement. Now, all we did for the ride was, while I was at the Bundy Ranch, somebody from Blanding, which is the city that the canyon is right next to, came and asked if we would lend personnel to protect the people while they did this ride, because they expected to be not only monitored, but possibly to be stopped or have their rights infringed while they perform that ride. So we had six other people there besides myself, and which was a lot less than the Bundy Ranch, but mostly what it did was Bundy Ranch. A lot of the people who showed up of their own volition came armed themselves and ready to defend themselves. So all you're doing at that point is cueing them into the defensive strategy and bringing them in as a piece to it. So we did the same thing at Recapture Canyon. We had six people who could essentially act in a leadership role to help perform that defensive function and bring the rest of those people on board. There wasn't anything to be worried about on the ground that was observed, but after the ride, we saw three where at this point our assumption is that they were FBI. The FBI had sent the BLM home the day before the ride and said, you're not to be out there. We're not going to have another Bundy Ranch a month and a half after the Bundy Ranch, and possibly have dead people lying around. So you guys are going to go home. And the FBI occupied their office. And this is why we believe that the three guys that we saw come out of the canyon a couple hours after everybody was gone, in ACU uniform and carrying scoped rifles and cameras, were probably FBI guys. This was after we were told by the sheriff that there would be no federal presence in the canyon whatsoever. So there you go. That brings the sheriff into question as well. So Phil Lyman is the county commissioner who organized the ride, and he was brought up on federal charges somewhat after the ride. And so that's what he's facing the sentencing for. He's been convicted, and now he's awaiting sentencing. And it looked like it was supposed to be somewhere. One of the organizations was pressing for the full punishment, which would have been somewhere to the tune of $150,000, which included fines and fees, and a year imprisonment. And so our offer of support is based on him not submitting to that sentence, whatever that sentence is, saying, well, I'm not going to allow you to arrest me today, in the words of Kurt Russell and Tombstone. I don't think I'm going to let you arrest me today. So that if he decided that, then I would go down there and pending obviously advisory board approval, I would go down there and we would utilize OMD resources in order to stand in defense of his decision not to be arrested. So that is that one. Are you familiar with Lavoie Finicum? John, I know I'm.
No, I'm not.
I'm not. So I definitely am going to have to do a lot more research before I make a, crazy decision to where I'm just like, okay, well, I'm going down here and not going to let this guy get arrested and put myself in jeopardy. That's I definitely need to know more about that. But I mean, we can move right along. At some point.
To explain the process, I've got the information from Finnegan, but he's going back and forth on this whole thing. So, I'm not going to take the many hours it's going to take to put together the entire history of his event unless we feel that he's going to stand up for himself. And we're not going to stand up for somebody that's not going to stand up for themselves. So there will be a lot more information. I've got most of it. I just haven't reviewed it. He sent me a bunch of files, and so I've got the information, but, it's my time. It could take 10 or 15 hours to put it together. But if we are going to move on something, there will be a whole background, which at the Bundy Ranch we didn't really get until Ryan Bundy came out with an hour-and-a-half video explaining the history of the whole thing. I didn't have access to the information to write it then, but it's necessary that we know, and the final decision of OMD would be based upon that history as well, whether we're going to put out the call out or not. But we're looking at things that have the potential. And, you know,
gotcha.
Dr. Ryan's the initial, the primary contact with people. If they're interested, then I get with them on the history, which is why I'll be involved in the Red River thing. I've got a little of the background on it, and, but before you have to make a decision, and the decision would never require that you go. As I said before, the brains can be here or at the front lines, either one, as long as they have a phone with them and we can communicate. But you will get
a whole package. What? We can talk about that later. Yeah, there'll be you're not never going to be asked to make a there may be less information than you want to have in order to make a decision, because a decision may be that time sensitive. But generally we're not going to make decisions without the information. So surely before you would be asked to lend your opinion to any of this, then you'll be provided with the information or allowed the time to gather that information yourself. As far as the whether or not you personally respond, the advisory board itself doesn't necessarily need to be on the ground. Given your age, your leadership aptitude, and your physical presence, I am going to request that you go to any event that I go to, or if there's two events going on, that you go to another one. But we'll have that discussion later. That's on a different note.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely a goer.
Somebody has to go to become the militia liaison, the communication between the rifles and the owner. There's the legal distinction that has to be made.
Yeah. Okay, so Lavoie Finicum is another one. And you know what I need to do also is I need to hyperlink, because in this matrix I have names and I have some articles in it in a different section. I need to hyperlink things so that when you guys click on Lavoie Finicum, that it opens up that level. And then you can click on an article and it'll take you to that article on the internet. Or it'll give you a few different articles that you can choose from. So anyway, that's just something for me, but it'll help everybody be situationally aware of what's going on with each one of these. So Lavoie Finicum, we're on Phil Lyman. Phil Lyman, that's kind of where we're at. I probably should get in contact with him this week. And Gary, that article that you sent was the BLM excessive in their use of force or whatever in this whole entire thing. Who's the guy? What's that?
The artifact one?
Yeah. Is that Dr. Reed that they're talking about?
I'm not sure yet. I just wanted to pass it on to you. I haven't looked into it very much yet, but it's Dan Love again.
Yeah. Yeah, Dan Love was the... I don't think that he's the special agent in charge in that region anymore. I think he's out in the other region. Dan Love has a particular character about him. And he's sinister. And he's not just sinister. The reason I use the word sinister is because it denotes his intelligence as well. He's very smart. And... so he has the mental ability to accomplish things that don't require much physical force. And what that also allows him to do is use that physical force in the proper manner to accomplish his goals. So he's pretty sharp. And they got Dr. Reed and some other gentlemen to basically go away. Dr. Reed killed himself. Because of their manipulations and the pressure that was put on them. So it's a pretty nasty ordeal that's going on. Daniel P. Love is the special agent in charge also for the Bundy Ranch ordeal.
You noticed the last two words on there, didn't you? At the bottom?
What's that?
On the email I sent you. Yeah.
Oh, okay. What are you alluding to?
The plan.
The plan?
Oh, yeah.
For restoration?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so there's Phil Lyman, and I'll go over that article, and I need to have a conversation with Phil this week to get brought up to speed. He thought that it would be somewhere at the beginning of November, most likely that his sentencing would be taking place. So we'll see where he's at. I'll have an update for you guys. Stanton Gleaves, another one that we're looking at. I still don't have contact with him, but I have somebody who does have contact with him and has already passed on that that we wanted to talk to him, and he has said that not only does he want to talk to us, but he's interested in support. So there's that one. And then we have the sanctioned event, Veterans on Patrol. That would probably be, Gary, do you have any updates on the Veterans on Patrol deal?
I talked to Lewis the other day, and he did not get, he's got one other organization down there. I'm thinking of a follow-up article. He did get some response to the ad. Now, you know, we have talked before about, in terms of logistics, larger tents. They're getting larger tents donated, and remember, his role is willing to be the support staff if we do have a call-up, as long as they're satisfied with the legitimacy of it. So they're acquiring the equipment that will be probably be available to us in the event there's a call-up, or when there is a call-up.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, nothing on that. Their operations are successful. They've got food enough to feed an army, and they're doing quite well.
Cool. All right. Are there any questions on any of those possible responses or anything that anybody has that I should be adding to the list, anything that I need to look into as far as a response or anything? Anything anybody has to mention about it?
Well, the item on the agenda that you skipped over, Islam, I'm wondering if we ought to start putting our heads together and start thinking, is there any more activity that we can become involved in? I'm not suggesting that, you know, staking out a mosque is an OMD operation, but I'm, you know, I think considering what's been happening in Europe the last week, I'm really getting concerned about what's going to happen here. And if a town refuses to approve a mosque and the federal government wants to force it on them, do we have a role in that? You know, things like that. We need to start broadening our look at Islam.
Okay, so yeah, that was the next point. Nobody has anything on the response, potential responses. Okay, and then background checks, we were pushing that off to till we get with Tim, right?
I think that would be the best idea.
Okay, and then Islam and refugees, you're saying that if the federal government were to force a local municipality into allowing a mosque to be established in their jurisdiction, what would our involvement be, or what is that an area for our involvement, is what you're getting
right
at.
That's right. One thing that potentially could be of interest to OMD. Are there other situations that might occur that would be of interest to OMD? I think we need to, like I say, start thinking about what effect Islam's having on this country and where OMD has a role. If they build a mosque and somebody's got a pig farm next to it, I think this occurs in Texas, if they become a threat to the guy with the pig farm, is that an OMD operation if the guy wants us there? but we need to start.
Yeah, we need to brainstorm some more on that. I get what you're saying. I mean, not coming up with a direct link at the moment, right? But I've already discussed with you, Gary, about my intentions about my own operation that I'm planning on doing as far as investigative work. I got this mosque here in my backyard that I obviously have a hard-on for.
You're cutting out a little bit, John. I don't know if it's your connection or your phone.
I'm driving through the desert, so that might be why.
There you go. Sounds a lot better.
You better know.
Well, I was saying, yeah, I'm all for anything that we can find that will affiliate with us. It's kind of the fight that I'm going against right now. I don't know exactly how OMD would fit into the situation. I'm doing my own investigative work. You know, at this mosque that's in my backyard, we've got 5 terrorists from different time periods that have come from this place. There's obviously more than meets the eye. And I'm doing everything I can, in a, you know, as just a civilian nowadays. And, you know, I've filed my own report and what have you, but I'm definitely going to be taking it a step further. I'm going to have people going in burkas, with cameras, and just exposing what's actually taking place. I don't want to sit here and be like a journalist or anything, but getting the truth out about the threat that Islam poses and what's already happening behind closed doors out in these mosques, there's a lot of, in fact, this would probably be a good role. There's a lot of people that are unable to speak against Islam. Their rights are being violated. Pam Geller has already, there's been numerous women that have tried to escape from Islam, and they, you know, they get attacked or completely cast away from their family when they don't want to abide by Sharia law in their own household. So she's like set up a kind of like a almost like a battered women organization, you know, that helps women escape from Islam. It's like a battered women home. Perhaps we can help push that kind of an agenda. And I don't know. I'll have to go back to the drawing board, and you know, it's nothing that was going to be decided right this second. But I'm sure there's other ways that we can help on that issue.
And my reason.
Yeah, and the.
Go ahead.
The thing you're talking about with that women trying to escape Islam makes a lot of sense. That's exactly the type of thing that OMD would be there for, is to protect people from other people or entities that would try to harm them. And then on the what you said, Gary, as far as the federal government trying to force local municipalities into accepting this infiltration to make their speech more pointed here. How would we insert ourselves in that? That's the difficult part, because that's illegal. You know that the city or the county is not going to organize an armed force to protect, to defend themselves from the federal government. So
well, that's where the militia liaison comes in. If they would like the assistance of OMD, and we do it with the blessings of the majority of a city council or county commission, I think we'd be justified. The problem is, how long an operation is it? There's a lot of details that are missing. But when I say what we need to start thinking about, and, you know, and I'm going to talk to John some more about it, too, since he's doing all this research on his own. But we have always looked at the government as the other side of the line. And mm-hmm. I think we need to start looking at Islam as the other side of the line, as a potential threat to individual rights in this country. Let's see, a guy paid $135,000 because he wouldn't do a queer cake. And then we've got Muslims get $150,000 or $240,000 because they were got fired because they wouldn't carry beer. You know,
yeah.
it's kind of hard to deal with this shit. But we've got to start thinking out of the box and start seeing if there's something that we can do. Those are legal issues. They're hard to deal with. But, you know, we've got to broaden our thinking to incorporate defending Americans against Islam whenever an opportunity avails itself that falls within the realm of defense.
So I guess the question becomes, because the my understanding of it is that the Islamic infiltration is the government becomes a proxy arm of that infiltration with the means that they use it. And so I guess the question is, do you defend one person against another? Because that would be a task, you would think, for local law enforcement or something like that. So I guess that's why I have a difficulty in placing exactly where a response would be from one person to another. So when we say Islam, what we really mean is one person, you know, and their ideology. Imposing on another person and their freedom. And the only way that they're able to accomplish what they're doing is by using that government as a proxy arm of infiltration.
Right.
So do we have to wait then for the government to impose itself in that manner? How do we preemptively put Islam into that slot without
Yeah, and you're
going
to have to win the support. First off, I think it would be something that should happen is that you flat out say that you do not recognize Islam as just
a religion.
We'll start right there. Yeah, it's not just a religion. So I mean, I'm going to sit here and say it's, you know, I know my beliefs on it, that this is more than just a religion, it's an ideology. Or you sent me, I believe, Ryan, you sent me those two. The definition of ideology and definition of religion, which both were very easy to argue that it could be either way. And the fact that it did fit under also the definition of ideology, and the fact that it comes with its own Sharia law or its own political agenda, and that just makes it a whole nother battlefront. Rather than looking at it as a government tie, it's if you have the support of the people to where, okay, it's decided that we're going to shut this mosque down, and you surround the mosque, and you don't let terrorism is brewing in this place, and we're shutting it down. Right. Again, that's a pretty hefty and crazy decision to do, but if we worked with also the government or some of these elected officials and let them know our intentions, or that this is like a goal of ours, or that
Gary and I have
here, it needs to shut down. The government's unable to touch them. The government, their hands are tied behind their back because of certain laws that are in place, which I know we need to abide by as well, but if it's not working, it's not working.
So, Dennis, I don't know if you've been involved in these conversations, but we might as well bring them out here. Gary, we've talked about using the advisory board essentially in the capacity of a committee of protection.
Or a committee of correspondence, primarily, information out.
Now, in the manner of what John is talking about, let's say that it was determined based on the evidence that we were able to gather, that this specific mosque was a detriment to society, specifically the society. It's not just a detriment to the society that it resides within, because the people that have come out of that mosque have been in Texas, and anyway, so they're a of national concern. Now, in that manner, can OMD act as a national committee of protection and formulate a plan to mitigate that worry, that, you know, mitigate their effects on all of our society.
That's what I want to kind of open our thought process to. And let me give you an example. I'm not sure if the Phoenix Moss does it. From what I've read, a lot of moths, though, have their call to prayer. And they do it over loudspeakers that affects the entire community. Now, a Christian church wouldn't be allowed to even ring their bells in some places anymore. But here they've got loudspeakers calling to prayer. You know, if we... I'm not sure how we deal with things like that. Get somebody out there and read the decibels at different distances from the call to prayer and show the effect it has on the community and just do a public information campaign on it, or is it something that requires a greater effort? You know,
the fact that they read the Quran. I mean, we've seen the verses that are in the Quran. That was my biggest link to, okay, this place is promoting terrorism. All you have to do is read that book out to a group of people, and you're telling them to follow this book. That is inciting terrorism in and of itself, because these people are going to take that in its literal interpretation, and that's when we're going to start having these beheadings. I love how even on the Oklahoma one, they bring up the news about that guy that beheaded his coworker in Oklahoma, yet the news doesn't talk about the fact that he was a Muslim.
Right. Right.
Now, John, Dennis, I've asked you, and I need to get from you, you need to print out that letter exactly as you sent it to the Attorney General and sign it and then scan it, and then I'll put that package together, by the way, and I'll get it to all the members on board. Now, this is not an OMD issue, but I think it's a good demonstration of what the problem is, and it would be good background information for all the board members. I've been working with John.
Basically, what we want to look at is methods that we can start to defend against this invasion, and a little bit beyond just because the refugee thing is another issue, and we can come to that one next. But beyond just being reactive to the government proxy arm of Islamic infiltration, how can we directly address their influence on society, which is absolutely an infiltration?
Right.
So, Dennis, what are your thoughts on all this?
I think it's, without sounding theoretical, it's really a complicated thing to try to sort out, because a lot of it's colored by some of the internet, a lot of it's colored by what we think is going on, and I don't have that much personal contact with the community. Do any of you?
Yeah, I do. Look, I don't think all Muslims are bad, and I don't want it to just be like my opinion or thoughts or feelings, because we all know how motivated I am against Islam, just because I've studied it. It's my pet peeve. It's my thing. And I do have contact with Muslims, and I know that I'm not out saying, you know, I'm not against the Muslim people. I look at the people kind of like just people with AIDS still running around out having sex, and they're spreading it. It's a problem in our prisons. That's where their highest recruitment is coming from, is in prison. So you're getting some of these, these thugs, when you start to instill or embed Islam into these people, and then they think that they're dying for a cause, or that it's good to go out and commit jihad, it's definitely nothing we're going to be able to tackle right now at the moment. It's a big pill to swallow. And it's the political side of Islam that needs to be addressed. It's not the people that I'm really worried about, but there is a higher agenda of the higher people, and these imams are the ones that we need to worry about. They're running.
Well, let me ask you this, John. Let me ask you this. If the government was not insulating Islam from the persecution that it would almost assuredly see from the people. If the government was not insulating from the persecution that it would see from the American people, do you think that it would be as effective as it is?
No.
I'm having a tough time understanding that question.
What do you think?
The reason...
If the government,
yeah, go ahead.
If the government wasn't protective of Islam, using their laws, allowing them to do things, for example, not deliver beer when it's part of the fucking job. If the government wasn't insulating these people through the legal process from being treated as normal Americans would, would Islam be have a different effect in this country? Or put it in simpler terms. If I learn that I can get away with something, am I going to keep pushing that line and try and get away with more and more? And is that what Islam is doing in this country?
What would the people of Arizona do? And you yourself are taking a pretty good stand with your efforts. How much greater would the efforts be around the country at all of these mosques if the people were not afraid of government intervention in their efforts to stop Islam's infiltration?
Okay, yeah, that's definite. They're definitely getting extra protection, I guess, is what you're hinting at. Or
yeah, they're getting legal.
Not only do they have protection, but they also, you know, basically part of the reason you're not able to do some of the things that I can only imagine that you would be willing to do is because of your fear of the government.
Yeah, to an extent. And I'm not going to sit here and act like all macho, like I'm not afraid of anything, but I've definitely come to terms with what I'm willing and able to do. I'm not,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't want to kill people in our country. That's not where I'm at. Although if I do catch wind of a terrorist or, you know, able to prove it and being able to hold somebody accountable, that would be great. You know, but it, just to be able to shut this mosque down and where this is where the indoctrination is happening and it, the oppression that happens inside these things, I don't know. It's definitely a tough one. Like, where do you cut?
So the point of my question,
multiple-headed snake.
The point of my question is that should our goal be then to sever that insulating force? Because let's be theoretical. For instance, the mosque has a minaret. On top of that minaret is loudspeakers, but the imam does not go up inside of the minaret in order to have the daily call to prayer, or five times a day. He is down inside of an office or a sound booth or something like that within the mosque. He puts on a tape or something, or he speaks in, or he yells into a microphone. He cantors into a microphone, and it goes up there. So there's only one reason not to put together some type of operation that goes in and sabotages their ability to perform that task, which would include cutting the cable, removing the magnets from the speakers, plugging them full of putty, whatever you want to do in order to make sure that five times a call a day to prayer doesn't happen. The only reason not to do that is because of two fears. One fear would be that the government of some sort, and charged with its duty to defend life, liberty, and property, would then start to research and investigate and find out who sabotaged this piece of property, private property. The other one would be out of fear of the private people who own that property, which are the Muslims themselves. I venture a guess that you probably have less fear of the Muslims investigating and finding out who you are than you do of the government finding out who you are.
Right. Yeah, I'd say that's probably a good, fair analogy.
And so the question then becomes, if such ideas are to be promoted, and I kind of just gave you one, then would OMD defend somebody who was going to be investigated and put on trial or arrested for having performed that function. Or do they take that risk themselves outside of any protection?
Well, that's exactly the kind of thing we need to think about. Dennis, I want to refer you to page 35 of the plan. The heading is Recent Immigrants, and that'll give you an idea of what my thought process was 5 years ago with regard to the Muslim infiltration. Page 35, the subject in the plan for restoration of constitutional government, the heading is Recent Immigrants.
Yeah, so I think that the Muslim thing is surely a matter of national security, which Operation Mutual Defense would definitely be in line with looking at, things of that nature. I just have a difficulty, and which is why it's going to require some discussion. I mean, we probably should move on and then carry this on to next week's discussion, and then Dennis, you can call and have some conversation with John this week when you do, and if
sure.
You guys can talk about this, I would like to talk about it with you a little bit more and discuss some more theoretical ideas I have on that line. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of different conversation that comes about between us, John. I have some ideas myself on that stuff. So
awesome.
And I'd like to hear your ideas on it as well. So does anybody have any specific things they want to bring up on the Islam thing? We'll move on to refugees.
Only to advise John, if you hear of a large refugee convoy Syrian refugees, quote unquote, coming into an area, we've got the beginnings of a plan to deal with something like that. I can explain it more to you some other time rather than take the meeting time now, but we've discussed it at the board meeting, and Ryan and I have discussed it extensively. So just if you hear of something that with enough notice where there could be a response, we might be able to do something along that line.
Awesome.
Dennis, do you have anything, sir?
Nope, I'm good on that. Just
okay. Oh, good.
Nope, go.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to the second part of it, which is the refugees. And first off, I know, Dennis, I sent you something over this week. Did you have a chance to look at any of that?
Yeah, I looked at it, and it's a little bit of a rehash of some of the earlier stuff, listing out, you know, some of the various places that we'd already had and some of the stuff that Gary sent me as well. So it looked like a, mm-hmm. you know, a compilation. The issue is whether or not, you know, you believe that there's only a trickle coming in rather than a flood, which is kind of hard to determine.
Right. Right.
But,
so
most of the stuff is pretty generic, to be honest with you. I mean, lists of things places that could or might take them at some point.
Yeah, that's all I've really seen. And that I kind of wanted to send you that because it seemed like a good it's a centralized document. It had a lot of information just in that one document compiled from other things. I agree in your synopsis is that we're seeing a lot of I think that what has happened is that an awareness has been brought about. The government has been, the State Department has been talking about bringing in these refugees. We've seen the stuff that's going on in Europe with the refugees. And I think a lot of stories are being created about us bringing in refugees and these entities that are bringing them in. And even though those stories may be fictional, what they're doing is they're raising an awareness of all the entities that are prepared to receive them. And I think that's good because it's giving a lot of people a preemptive ability to single out those entities and vet them and try to insert their protest to what they're doing, specifically to what we're talking about, the OMD function might be. I know I've spoken with you, Dennis, on what Gary was just talking about, the putting together a committee of safety, the thing that we're trying to do up here in Montana, putting together a committee of safety and then getting the committee of safety to approve a militia action to intercept these convoys of refugees as they come into a state and then perform the in-processing preliminarily before they reach their destination and completely, what's the correct word I'm looking for, independent of any governmental process.
A thorough interrogation, even to the point of holding bacon an inch in front of their face, but not touching them with it, and then turning a report over to the local law enforcement and going public with the report to show what's coming to the country.
And that, so the plan is there. I haven't put anything on paper, although it's gotten pretty comprehensive at this point, to the point where it surely needs to be on paper. And maybe that's something that I'll do before our next meeting is get that on paper. And then that what the idea that I had was that we could take that and refine it amongst, you know, with your guys' knowledge, and then present that to different units in each state that could perform that function or that would be interested in performing that function.
Yeah, I think that would be wise.
I'm sorry, say that again, Dennis?
I said I think that would be wise, because once we've got something on paper, we can begin taking a look at it and shift it back and forth, and it can grow.
Okay. So are there any other ideas on how, on what OMD wants to do as far as the refugee situation?
I got an idea as far as a bit more offensive maneuver too, perhaps trying to getting these individuals in these different states together ahead of time. I mean, we need to start planning ahead of the game, and if you're able to get those local governments or whatever to get on board and say that we're not going to accept these refugees, like getting them to start speaking out publicly before the government already tries to push it on them. I mean, although it's going to end up, I don't see why they wouldn't be pushing them into these sanctuary cities, you know, the government lovers.
I'm going to resend you the article that I sent out to the advisory board this week. And what it has is all of the entities that will receive refugees. And one of the problems is, for instance, here in Montana, the city of Missoula has a couple of different organizations that have already said they're preparing themselves to receive Syrian refugees. The city of Missoula just happens to be like Southern California, right in the middle of Montana. And so, while a great deal of Montanans completely disagree with it, the city of Missoula may or may not bring in 200 refugees. And be totally comfortable with it. So the idea would be, with the plan that I was talking about before, would be to intercept them. You're not going to get the city or county of Missoula to decry bringing in these refugees. But you could get the other cities or counties, in line with what you're saying, maybe push the other county governments within the state to try to put pressure on them to make it happen. I don't know about that either, and that's kind of what we were talking about subverts government altogether. It's a parallel function. If the government is not performing the function, then we the people perform the function.
Okay. Yeah, once it's on paper, like he's saying, we'll brainstorm. I mean, intercept these refugees. What all does that entail? Are we taking a bus hostage? Are we
yes.
driving them down to Mexico ourselves?
Well, let me tell you what we were talking about in Montana. They've got the mountainous roads, and the idea was to divert the bus into, say, a rest area and bypass, run the other traffic around, take them one at a time and interrogate them. Where are you from? What street do you live on? See how their background. Trouble is, we probably need somebody who speaks Farsi in this. But do a very thorough investigation of the background. Why did you come here? Why did you leave your country? Why didn't you defend your country? Get all these answers. And we probably need to develop the principal questions, because quite often the answer leads to another question. But the principal questions that would be asked of these people, and you know, watch the body language, see if they appear to be lying. That's where you pull the slab of bacon out and hold it up and say, answer truthfully. And then make a report of every one of the individuals, identify them, get his picture, and make this report and provide it to the local law enforcement. But also it begins to demonstrate, you know, say 60% of the people on the bus are not what they appear to be, what they claim to be when they sought refugee status. There you've got fact, not just speculation, 67% are bad guys or something like that. You can actually, you've got proof of what's coming in, and if local law enforcement doesn't do anything, then you keep an eye on these people, and if they start, the bad ones start getting together, meeting together, you know, maybe sneak a microphone in there and get their conversation, find out what they're talking about. But doing our own intelligence on the people coming in is, I think, is the general idea that we had, and it can be expounded to get more covert in monitoring conversations.
Yeah, we have the plan is pretty comprehensive, John, for what we've talked about putting together up here. And like I said, I'll get it on paper so you can see it, and maybe I'll include a diagram or something of the marshalling procedure and how to keep them all. You know, one of the things was to bring in the humanitarian entities that want to receive these refugees and incorporate them into the plan, so that while the interrogations are going on, or interviews, if you want to be a little softer in the language, while the interviews are taking place, the humanitarian entities are providing them with food and water and medical care, so, you know, that we're doing everything right, and we're bringing all the right people into it, and it doesn't look so aggressive. If they don't want to participate, then it's just going to have to look as aggressive as it looks. It doesn't matter, because the function of defense has to be fulfilled.
Yeah, filling the role the government's failing to do, which is properly vetting the people that are coming in this country.
Yep. So that's that one. Is there anything else we want to bring up on this refugee stuff?
No, I think once you get it on paper and send it out, it'll be easier to discuss, sort of like we did with some of the other things, like the PowerPoint and such.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay, then I guess that brings us to number 6, the review of the individual task list.
Okay, well, that's pretty quick and dirty, because we already talked about the matrix. Let's see. Logo and letterhead design, Gary's got that in progress and sent out, I think.
I sent a draft, still waiting for the web page to be functional.
Yep, and again, the website enhancement was the next one, so we're working on that one. Gary got us the email addresses, although he's going to take one of mine back, and we'll sort that out with me and John and everything else in the future.
That's already taken care of. Just abandoned the planning one and the double one, and John, I've given the information on the planning one. He can change his password through me, or he's got the same set of instructions.
Okay, that all works for me, so I'm going to use just the research one from now on.
Right.
Let's see, Brevity Code and Training Plan, those are Tim's, and he's not here to address them. We talked briefly about background checks.
Did anybody else have trouble opening his training document? I could not open it.
Mine opened, but it opened into a very weird format. Not sure why.
I didn't have any problem seeing it.
What did it open in? What did it open in? What program did it open?
I don't remember. I don't use a computer very often. So I opened it on my phone, and it's a quick office viewer, which just basically it allows you to view anything in any format.
So phones do better than computers at viewing anything, huh? interesting world.
Well, it's designed to take a lot of mixed formats on the phones. They have a lot of the interpreters built in, so you get that, be able to view it on that small screen.
You have to find out what interprets it so I can read it. So anyway, my only concern would be, and Tim's not here, but you know, if there were 2 half days of close order drill, and then they used close order drill to move the people to any the firing range or anything else where they get used to the idea that I mentioned last week, that you know, if you're deploying, for example, if you're in columns, it's easy to deploy the columns in a firing line. If you got a bunch of people bunched up, string out this way and, you know, get 3-foot intervals and everybody's just scrambling around. You know, there's a lot of advantages to be a quick response to a defensive line, for example, if you have the close order drill. And along with the other aspects of it, which is, you know, obeying commands, teamwork, and not getting your boot heels unshined.
I think we were talking about that last week, was incorporating a are you saying he only added a
I don't know what he's
a
added.
Short period of time? But, okay, I don't know if he added anything either, but, yeah, we were talking about putting some type of a little bit of time into drill. The other idea, too, is, and this is going to be hard, you know, a lot of militia types, they don't necessarily like that type of structure, especially if they've been in the military. You know, I don't necessarily like standing in a formation and right-facing and column left marching and shit like that, but I understand the utility of it, and I surely understand the disciplinary platform that it creates. So possibly incorporating, just making our training organization run a little bit more organized, if you will, I guess, along the lines of every time we move from one place to the other, using proper drill and things like that. You're going to the chow hall, though. Well, then we're doing all the same stuff you did, kind of like a basic training. And I guess that was my idea for the training down there anyway, was that it performed the function of a basic training for militia all around the country. And I think in that light, it really should be a basic militaristic style.
And then you've got the advantage, if the local community has a parade, to go out and march in civilian clothes with rifles on the right shoulder arms, and you know, getting people used to an idea that they become uncomfortable with because of government propaganda.
Right.
Okay, well, we can address it more when Tim's actually here to help us. I think that pretty much completes the individual task list, unless anyone has anything.
On your deal, what in the heck was I? I just had one that you went over. I should have written it down. It was only a couple of minutes ago, and I was sure I would remember what it was. I'm sorry.
About the application you sent us?
Oh, no. I'll wait till the stuff to bring up at the end for that. Training plan, board member background checks. Oh, hey, Dennis, did you happen to send off yet? And I didn't see it, so I'm assuming you didn't. The job descriptions.
Well, we were going to take and extract those from the PowerPoint to put on the website, I thought.
Okay.
So I didn't do up any other ones. If I need to do up some, let me know and I'll do them. But I think that's where we left it, because it was going to be put into the website format.
Okay. I need to go back and look at it to see.
Not to backtrack, I do got one more question, though, real quick. Does OMB, is this, like, in it, I guess, how old is OMB, and is it like an LLC, is it a nonprofit, or is it just operating as OMB and it's not any sort of an official entity yet?
Well, it's in the womb right now, and our objective was to go public next week after the board meeting. I hope we can keep that schedule. As far as making an LLC, we, for I think good cause, we decided that it should not handle money because the government might not like it and would take any bank account. And so there's another organization that hasn't been gotten in the womb yet, called Fair True Faith and Allegiance, which is a substitute for Oath Keepers that would be the fundraising entity and would provide funds as necessary to OMD.
Okay.
But we intend to go public and then, you know, advertise it, have people come up and sign up as, you know, I don't know what the best word, I don't know if we've determined that yet, but as volunteers or followers or something like that, that would be the people that are on the mailing list and would be notified of a call-up.
Gotcha.
There's a lot of people who are going to go straight from, you know, that were already respondent to OMA events and mailing lists and such. A lot of the contacts that I have that are kind of the foundation of the network itself that would respond are going to be a part of it. There's a lot of people who are going to respond who are never going to be sign up. They're never going to have their name known or anything like that. I mean, I have a whole list of phone numbers that I call when I go someplace, and nobody will ever know who they are. So it's a decentralized network in that form. And as Gary said, it's in the womb now, and everything that we're doing now is establishing the groundwork for it.
Okay.
But thinking
awesome.
Of the old fax days, one fax go out, that person might refax to 10. What Ryan was just talking about, one of the people in an organization would be on the mail list more than likely. And when he received the notice, then he would let everybody else know. So if we have 1,000 people, it's very possible that 20,000 would have notice within an hour of a notice going out.
Okay.
And then once it hits social media, I mean, that's one of the benefits to having people like yourself and some of the other heavy hitters in social media that are out there and YouTube channels. Is that, you know, when you send something out, it's going out to not only the people who are on your list, but it's also going out to a bunch of other people. So ultimately,
right.
The idea is that it reaches people who have no idea that there is an OMD, and they may not even receive the information as it's coming from OMD. But they will be aware of it, and they may respond just based on the fact that something is going on.
But for that reason, the credibility of OMD has to be retained at very high.
Yeah.
So we're not going to
go
protect some miners up in a legal dispute with the government over a claim. Or go protect Kim Davis when she hasn't asked us to come down there. We don't need the negative press that Oath Keepers managed to get recently.
Yeah, and also the personalities involved, making sure that, you know, John, you and I may have a level of regard for one another, and thus, you know, we need to make sure that our personal regard for one another doesn't cloud the public perception of what we've put out either. Basically, we need to keep our character spotless, not spotless, but acceptably tarnished.
Yeah, and then OMD should not be brought up in conjunction with your name unless it's an OMD operation. I do a lot of writing. They will only bear the OMD name when I'm writing for OMD. If you do a mosque free speech rally or something like that, if it's not OMD sanctioned, and we I don't know if you noticed, but we did sanction what Lewis Arthur was doing down in Tucson and in Phoenix. But
John,
if it's not some day by OMD, that's John Ritzheimer working on his own. You have every right to do, you know, moonlight from OMD or maybe moonlight to OMD. But the line of distinction between what's an OMD sponsored function versus what's an individually sponsored function. But again, at the same time, you have to protect your reputation, which you've done did well in this last event, in terms of keeping your following following you.
Right.
And it's subtle things like presentation, like you did a beautiful job on the last event. You know, you got positive press rather than negative press.
Yeah. Probably because I stayed in Facebook jail. They keep putting me in that Facebook jail.
Well, you've learned to watch your tongue a little bit, and, you know, maybe if you eventually decide to drop the fuck Islam, you might do even better. But then that draws a lot of attention, too, to you, the good attention from certain people. So, but that, those are your choices. That's outside of OMD.
Right.
All right, I'm going to push us on a little bit here. Now that we're even, we are now at twice our desired time limit here. So, Dennison, we didn't have anything else on the task list?
No, that's it for right now. I'm going to take and add the, you're going to come up with a refugee option, so I'll throw it on there.
Okay.
And I'll make sure we capture that. And pretty much for the next one, we'll probably talk about the background checks again. We'll continue to discuss Islam and refugees. And I guess we move on now to reports and functional areas.
We have one more in between there.
Oh, sorry, the new members you sent out.
Yeah, discussing potential new members, which I sent out an application to you guys for Tom Diamond. Tom is a member of my local unit up here. And he doesn't know exactly what utility he can serve in this whole endeavor, but he wants to be involved. And mainly he submitted an application because he's going to take part in the discussions that are going on in Northern California 2 weeks from now, or excuse me, yeah, the week after this week. And so we're requiring applications and background checks on all those people. But, you know, I can give you a little bit of background on him, and then if you have an idea as to where he could be placed, I'm assuming it's going to be a Tier 2 role. Basically, he spent 18 years running around to different parts of mostly the same area of the country. But anywhere from Vermont, New York, Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Wyoming, kind of this whole region here was the majority of it. I'm not going to say running from the federal government or any of that, but he had a wife, an ex-wife, and he had some kids with her, and she was using the government to try to take the kids, but she was a horrible drug addict. So he spent that time and secured those kids with his new wife, and they lived as other people, took on different identities, and he has, the guy should really write a book in what he was able to do. He was able to fool a lot of different governmental entities, secured driver's license under different names, all kinds of things. And so he's adept at chameleonship, I guess, if you will. And after his kids were old enough and they were able to make decisions for themselves, his daughters, he's gone right back to living a normal life. And he owns a construction company, Diamond Construction. He generally works out of the eastern Montana and North Dakota area because the money is so good out there. He does custom rock work and general construction, and I've worked with him a bit, so he's got a great work ethic. In fact, the guy's got a fantastic, ridiculous work ethic. He's been very dedicated to the local unit in any manner that he can be. He's not necessarily trained in any type of military function, but he has extensive survival knowledge, and as I said before, he's going to take the initiative kind of guy, very sharp and adaptable, and he can manage things. He runs the company, and he does it pretty well. So I don't know exactly where that puts him in, but I guess that can be up to a discussion here.
So So,
well, Gary and I talked a little bit before you got on that it just seemed like the application was a little lean.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for filling out some of that. And, yeah, I guess that goes back to, again, to the discussion about the background check at some point. You know, what are we going to use? And as long as he's willing to go through one, I'm good.
On tier two.
Where
yeah.
would you... Yeah, where do you see a guy like that? I was thinking I wanted to bring him up as another response coordinator, but I guess his lack of any type of strategic or tactical military knowledge kind of gives him quite a shortcoming in helping to create a defensive situation.
I'm not sure that's true if he's a good thinker, you know, if he can think standing up, because he's basically going to be liaison between the owner and the militia. And the militia shared command would be the primary one. And he would, you know, if he went on one or two missions, I think he could possibly work his way up learning the tools of the trade, so to speak. Now I recognize who this is because he's got so many names.
Yes.
I met him as somebody else when I spoke with him. But I can see the why you brought his application on. And, yes, when we figure out what we're going to do on the background check, then we'll go ahead and see if he'd fit that role. I think that...
So I've talked to him about being on the response team. On my response team, and as like a either operations or as an assistant response coordinator, if you will. But I would think anybody who's an assistant response coordinator is essentially going to have some other task, whether it's intel or operations or logistics, whatever. But I would think bringing him on as a tier two operations would make sense.
Well, I think that before we do, once we figure out background check and run that, what we need to do is have him on a conference call for an interview, and I'd like to get a little more comfortable with him because of the meagerness of the, you know, he was born in 1970, he's only had one job, and that's his own job, and maybe he's reluctant to give that information up because he's been hiding out, but...
A lot of his work he did for himself.
I don't see any enthusiasm in the application.
Sure. I don't honestly know what I'm going to get out of him as far as that type of stuff, but I'll tell him to spice it up a little bit on his background work and such.
I mean, right now, when I look at this, and even listening to you because of your knowledge of him being personal and all that, you know, with no background, could he be government?
Right. Oh, yes, and I've considered it and brought it up to him as well. He has the perfect story to try and push in, and it's either very well rehearsed or it's true, so... I've met his son, but his son is a few years younger than me, you know, so there's no, other than that, I haven't met his wife. I've heard his wife on the phone. And so there's some information gaps there, I agree, 100%. So what I can do is I'll have him spice up the, get us a little more info on the background as far as his job history. And then I'll get him to do the background check. I didn't even send him the information for the background check yet. So I'll get him to do the background check. We'll get that, and then we'll talk about it then.
Okay. Well, also, the last item on the application, he says, yes, charges dropped. Please refer to background check. Does he not know what the offense was?
I don't know.
Ryan.
Yes.
I see a lot of utility in the gentleman just generically. If he's running, you know, a construction operation up in that area, he's dealing with an awful lot of the problems you're going to have in a base camp. So I don't see a problem with him maybe, you know, doing the base camp work. He probably has access to generators, equipment, used to running a team of people, you know, making things happen. So I think he'd be useful for that.
Yeah, I'm looking at him as an engineering fit, too. Like, exactly what Dennis just said. Setting up a base camp, engineering, you know, what needs to be set up, what do we need to build, what do we need to construct. All for utilizing his asset, him as an asset. But then at the same time, just like Gary said, we got to keep our guard up. Could he be government?
Hey, yeah, that's absolutely, absolutely. And I've thought of that as well. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who's a paranoid fucker. He seems to be a pretty good guy. But there, I always get leery of people because he seems to have attached himself to me pretty heavily. And I get leery of people like that because I wonder why the hell they would want anything to do with me. So I will definitely
well,
get that extra.
Well, in your defense, you're mildly charismatic from what I can tell, and you had a success where most people haven't. So that draws people. But that I understand we need to be cautious, but you should expect some of that anyway.
Sure. Sure. No, I said that's my attempt at humility.
Well, guess what? I just squashed it. So you're one of the name brands, and you're one of the leaders. So get out there and do your thing, man.
Gotcha. So I'll get that stuff for the next one. We can discuss it, and I'll see if he'll be available for an interview at that point if we have all that stuff. I have a couple other guys, and while I have you here, Dennis, I might as well.
You know, get the application. Let's go over it again, and hopefully we can get something worked on background before we even schedule the interview. And the interview doesn't have to be necessarily on a Sunday, you know, intrude on a regular meeting.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll get the stuff together, and then we can just leave that on as a we'll talk about him at the next one. Leave on item number 7, I think we're at.
Yeah. Okay, Ryan, what else did you have? You said you had a couple more of them?
There's a couple more gentlemen. There's one specifically, but he wants to talk. He's talking to someone else as well. And it's specifically for research. And these guys would then work under you, Dennis. And one of them is a former family member of mine. And he's a very sharp guy. His name is Spiro. And if you went on YouTube and typed in Spiro, S-P-I-R-O, that's a Papa, Sierra Papa, India, Romeo Oscar. He's a very sharp guy. I think he's in his late 20s. He might be 30, 31 or something like that, my age, basically. And what they do, he works with Dabu 7. And if you're familiar with Dabu 7, then you know he's kind of a he's a sensationalist journalist, if you will. Not necessarily a journalist in that sense, but he takes in stories from world news that are going on, things that are most often contributed to conspiracy theories and such, and he lends some analysis to them and then reposts them on his own channel. And these guys have... Well, for instance, Dabu 7, who is the one that Spiro is talking about bringing on board as well, he has 159,000 followers on one YouTube channel. He's got 109,000 on another YouTube channel. So a lot of people pay attention to him. I think Spiro's in the realm of something like 15 to 20,000 total. And Spiro kind of acts as a ground pounder for not necessarily for Dabu 7, but in conjunction with them. So stories that they're looking at, Spiro doesn't have a problem going personally to the area in order to conduct the research. So the utility I saw was kind of combining your knowledge on intelligence requirements and such, and trying to mold his research ability into something that's useful for gathering factual information. Because given the nature of what I've just described, I'm sure you can see that a lot of the stuff they come up with is still in the realm of conjecture and theory when it's presented to the public, whereas when it's presented here, we need facts and solid information.
Yeah, can you go ahead and send me a link? Because I just took Spiro on Facebook, and there's only 97,000 plus posts.
No, go to YouTube.
No, it'll be on YouTube.
YouTube.com.
Oh, on YouTube, sorry.
Yeah.
Yep.
I looked at a couple of his, and, you know, he was pushing a petition, and he grabbed the adjectives that I hate that the mainstream media uses. He called the government a government action. I don't remember what it was. I looked at it right after I talked with Ryan about it. But he said illegally did this. But, hey, the law says they have a right to do it. It wasn't illegally. So he throws the adjectives in. But he's done pretty good at researching, getting footage and things like that. For example, the plane that caught fire on takeoff, I think it was. Maybe it was landing. He had some good footage of that. I think he's got a lot of potential. But
he'll dig. He just needs to be refined.
Pardon?
He'll dig, and he's motivated, and he wants to be involved. He just needs some mentoring and some refinement in his process.
Yeah, and that's why sometime you and I have got to have that conversation with him.
Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't you take and pass him my number then? Let him give me a shout if he's interested, and we can chat.
Okay. Yeah, I had told him, actually, it was on Wednesday or Thursday, something like that, when I ended up going out on this search and rescue, that I had intended on getting him on a conference call with you, him, me, and Abu 7, whose name is really Justin. But like I said, I had to go out there and try and bring someone back from the abyss. I will pass on your number. What's that?
I think it'd be better to just do with Spiro first, rather than have two people that you're interviewing at one time.
Well, the other thing, yeah, I agree with you. And then the other aspect of it is that not only is he useful for research, and when you need information, Dennis, you know, he's one of the guys that you could put on your team to get that information. Mm-hmm. But because these guys have such huge followings, you know, Spiro, if he wanted to tailor himself a little more factually in his representation. His representation really has nothing to do with his utility for Dennis. Because
I agree, but that, Dabu, does he need to know that there is an advisory board, or could the flow just go from Spiro to Dabu 7 on OMDR?
Right. So the other utility for these guys is in the media aspect, that they can put out a call to a massive amount of people, as long as their character was not tied to OMD. Gary had concerns about Dabu 7 because of his conspiratorial mannerisms and such. So, you know, he could be used in that sense. But kind of there's two aspects these guys can be looked at for. And I did send an application to Spiro, and he hasn't gotten it back to me yet. I will get him your number, Dennis, and then if you want to have a private conversation or whatever, if we wanted to, then the three of us, or even if John wanted to be a part of it, then we could talk to Spiro on this line.
Well, like I said, whenever is appropriate or whatnot, I mean, I'm willing to do it. So if you want to set it up as a three-way, that might be more comfortable for him, or even a four-way with John.
I don't think I need to, I mean, I don't want to seem like I'm not willing to partake in anything, but I don't know if I'm stupid yet to be screening or anything. I mean, I guess it wouldn't hurt to listen in. I'd be listening. I don't have much input on that area.
Well, John, the other, yeah, it is a little bit outside of your area. Specifically, you know, if we're going to be talking, if we do talk to Tom about coming on in operations, then that him as a tier two operations guy would put him directly under your, in your area. He would be one of your guys. So
he'd also be crossing into PR too, and it might be interesting to if he's got the equipment to do what John wants to do in the mosque, but
right.
Whole camera and
right.
Things like that.
Okay.
But on specifically to what you just said, John, as far as yourself and your ability or knowledge or whatever, that humility that you just displayed, then I'm just going to reiterate what Dennis just said to me, and that's that you have been asked to come on board in a leadership capacity with people who are leaders in the Patriot community, and I don't think anybody's going to get mad at you if you exert that
okay.
desired influence.
You're among friends now.
Okay, there's another, I have a few applications out. I don't want to go into the ones that are not responsive completely at this point, but I have tapped another guy for response coordinator, and he is a former Canadian sergeant major, basically. He was that's the capacity that he served in. He was a warrant officer of some sort, but I guess I don't understand their military structure. He called it a warrant officer, but he said basically I was like a comparable to a sergeant major in the American Army. So I don't understand what that means. He's a pretty knowledgeable dude. From what I've talked to him, he's very well trained. He's gigantic and imposing. He's one of the guys that invokes fear as soon as you see him. And he's pretty well spoken, pretty sharp. I don't have a resume back from him, but he is a Canadian citizen and he's here on a green card. So one of the first things that I asked him to be involved with is cadre for the basic training down at Naylor's location, to which he has agreed. And that brought up all kinds of cool historical contexts like Baron von Steuben, or excuse me, not Baron von. How come I always bring the Red Baron into the Revolutionary War? Anyway, what the heck is the German guy that trained all the guys for Washington?
Baron von Steuben. You got it right.
Von Steuben.
Well, who the hell's the Red Baron?
Actually, he was D. Steuben. Richthofen. But history recorded him as von Steuben. Richthofen or Richthofen was the Red Baron.
Oh, okay, thank you. You're correct. So I keep saying Baron von Steuben, thinking that he's the Red Baron, and then I correct myself to fit my ignorance in there. Anyway, okay. It brings up reminiscences of that to bring in some foreigner to help train forces. But anyway, and he's got a charisma about himself
American,
as well.
He's going to have to learn the American close order commands, not the Canadian ones. There's a model after the British, which are different than ours.
Okay, so those are some things that we're going to have to go into with him. Although I know he's done a lot of cross training work, and he has done some contractor work as well. So he may have knowledge of those things. But anyway, he responded to the mine up here in Montana, the one in Lincoln, with the Oath Keepers, and he was basically the first guy there. He was in charge of it for a very short period of time before he said, "This is a disaster, and I don't know why I'm a part of it," and left. His reasoning was that there's no reason for this to be an arms defense. He just was wondering why he was there with all his stuff doing what he was doing. So we've had some good conversations about it, and aside from the training aspect, I've also kind of put forth to him what a response coordinator would do, and he has a free schedule because he is retired out of the Canadian Army, and the Canadian Army apparently pays their guys like more than twice as much as our retirement for military, so he's sitting on a pretty cushy retirement, and so he has showed interest in the response coordinator position. But when I get an application back from him, that's just some good background for you guys. His name is John also, and I'll get an application and get that all to you. I'd like to bring him on board as fast as possible and to probably call him a Tier 2 response coordinator for the moment.
Sounds like he's got the background for it.
He seems like the right kind of guy. So anyway, those are the main ones that are being looked at the moment, and they cover a couple of good Tier 2 positions. Just for your knowledge, John, people that, you know, because it's not public yet, and even once it is public, we don't necessarily want to put out a broadcast for recruiting, and especially for advisory board or tier two positions. We want to be hand-selecting all those positions.
Awesome.
But the people, you know, if you have ideas, so when you see that PowerPoint document, you're going to notice that we have it divided into planning, research, public relations, logistics, communications, training, and response coordination. Those are the seven disciplines that the advisory board is divided up into. Obviously, we have now four of those represented here, and with when Tim is on, we have communications and training represented as well. So there's a, now with five people on the advisory board, we still have two more slots to fill, and to make it a total of seven. So if you have ideas of people and you can kind of get a glimpse for the personalities that are here and the level of, I think the level of conviction is obvious for anybody that's going to be involved, but the level of knowledge and experience that, that we want to require as a prerequisite for sitting on this board. The other requisites are going to be their notoriety, or in Dennis's case, their complete lack of notoriety.
I think that's going to change one of these days fairly quickly, but okay.
Happens to the best of us.
That's why.
Well, just associating with you folks, you're not exactly quiet and receding types.
Dennis is identified as Dennis. Everybody else has a last name.
Yeah. So the but you know, not just notoriety. When I say notoriety, you know, you're a well-known personality now in the movement. But you know, having maintained a degree of acceptable character along with that notoriety is the other key for this board, because we have to maintain the integrity of the board in order to maintain the integrity of the network and the decisions that the board makes and disseminates to that network, in order that the people involved in the network actually reply to our decisions. So if you have ideas for anybody or those other two slots for the board, then please bring them forth, and we'll get you an application, or rather you can send them that application that you were sent. And then the PDF, or excuse me, the PowerPoint that you got sent that has the structure, if you want to send that to them as well, that way, like the questions that you had here at the beginning of this meeting, as soon as they get an application, they can look at that structure and they'll know exactly what they're getting into.
Right.
And then tier two, anybody for tier two positions? You know, and basically I think Gary went over it very quickly before, but I'll make it even faster. Tier one makes decisions. Tier two helps to implement the decisions. That's basically what it is. And then tier three carries them out.
And what's our decision-making process here? Is it a majority rule? Is it, I mean, how,
well, like,
you know what I mean? Like
consensus that we get total agreement on the board. But, yes, it would be a majority of the board. But, like I say, I hope we get consensus, and we have on everything so far.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just think as time goes on, consensus is definitely, that's the goal in all of it. I mean, but, you know, and as long as it's fine and it's just, you know, noted, and, it, you know, there just may come a time where I disagree, and I think we're all the types of people that stand our convictions and just hold to our guns. So, I have no problem. That's part of it. I have no problem if I disagree with something, and as long as I'm allowed to disagree with something, and hey, but, you know, we're going to move forward with it or what have you, because this is what we're doing. And
you're expected to disagree.
Yep.
If you have any qualms, I mean, that's how we sort it out. We've had other things come before the board that, you know, we found a happy medium that was acceptable to everybody. And that's what we're looking for. Which is how we got the consensus. We've drawn things. We work together.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good to say, that we're all extremists as far as if you looked at ideologies across the board and how they're viewed right now, we're all extremists because we want to implement some change on the status quo as it exists. But tempering our extremism, just sitting right here with the four of us, there's probably some of us that have a much more extreme view of how things should go or shouldn't go, and probably a more tempered view. And coming into the middle of that, finding that common ground and deliberating, trying to find where the consensus is, I think will lend itself to reaching that consensus to where the majority is. A simple majority vote is not necessary. I think most often we'll be able to deliberate things to the point of finding that consensus. I'm pretty extreme in my views. I'll be the first to admit it. And that's why I like having a discussion with people who are older and wiser and more educated than me in many things. That way it'll temper my youthful vigor. And I'm also a long-winded. That is probably a bad idea to put me as the person who chairs the meetings because I might be the most long-winded fucker here.
Come up with one thing as far as if you disagree with the majority decision in something, the only thing that would be unacceptable would be for you to go out and publicly speak against an OMD operation.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very good. But I think it would really have to disagree with your conscience. A decision, for instance, if we were making the decision to go respond to something and you felt that it was a fake or a fraud or something like that, I would think that if you wanted to go against the decision of the board, not just disagree with it, but go completely against it, then I would just excuse myself. But that's a personal decision. So go ahead.
In an instance like that, I just think that also, if you completely think something's a fraud or whatever, then it's up to you to also do some homework and present your case better to the board out of the safety of OMD. I mean, if we care about this, we need to try to protect it as well.
Right.
Well, that's the whole idea of the board, is to get all the ideas out, and if there's any questions, to go out and find the answers before we make a decision.
Yeah, that was a perfect the perfect point to make, John. So if we don't have anything else on potential new members, that was it for that, John. So if you have any, I know you have a lot of people that you talk to. If you have ideas for people in those seven disciplines on tier two or on tier one that are not already taken, then feel free to send them an application and that PowerPoint and discuss with them what we do. You can always use Bundy Ranch as a good one.
I'm going to, whatever gets emailed over to me and I can see what slots are open, then, I do have a plethora of new contacts that I could bring to the table, but I'm not just bringing somebody in on a whim from social media or anything. Something like this, I'm going to take this on a whole personal level. I look forward to meeting all you guys personally and shaking hands with you and working with you rather than just over the phone or through social media or anything. So I'll definitely be screening to my best ability.
Yeah, we really want OMD to be the tip of the spear. When people need defense, when the government is infringing on them, or when they need defense from anything, we really want OMD to be a trusted entity that they know that when we say we're going to help you, that they're actually going to get that help. And so surely we don't want to base that on, like you said, the trivial relationships that come about on social media. And then also, of course, there's a lot of personalities that we're all aware of in social media that are completely bunk. So that's the reason for the background process, for the screening process.
And
all right. If that's that.
Let me add, too, that these meetings are considered confidential. We do record them for our record. It makes it easier for Dennis to figure out what happened, but they're considered confidential. So the discussions in here until a decision is made for it to leave the board stays within the board.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so if we don't have anything further on new members. Oh, Gary, Lisa Payne-Nager, is that, are we bringing her in for an interview, or what's up with her?
Well, she's tier two, but I've been waiting for, I'm going to call her and just tell her she's been accepted at tier two, and I don't think there's anything on tier two, unless we feel a need for an interview, to do an interview, but we need background, and I just got to get sorted out on how we're going to do background, because I haven't given her that information.
Okay, so the reason we want to do an interview with Tom is because we don't necessarily know where we want to put him as far as tier two.
Well, with Lisa, I don't think any questions, and with John, no questions were really raised that were unanswered. I think with Diamond, there's questions that need to be answered.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we have no questions and bring somebody on, at least at tier two, I don't see any problem. You know, if we need to interview them or not, we could get awful busy once we go public with people volunteering for tier two. So I guess when we vote, we have to decide if we want to interview or not. It did not come up in discussing Lisa Payne. It did not really come up in discussing with John, but it has come up in discussing with Diamond.
Okay.
I thought we had left it with that we were going to take and see the results of the background check, and if, as long as there was nothing negative there, that we'd go ahead and bring her on.
Right, and I'm going to inform her that she's been accepted by the board subject to background check, but we just don't have the procedure for the background check yet. And if Tim can provide us one to show that it's broader, especially in the criminal side, then it doesn't even have previous employment in it, which is one that most ones that I'm familiar with would do, you know, employer-based one. This is based on volunteers, not employers. So, I don't know. I just, if we're going to use this, then I'll give it to her to go and do perform the check. But
yeah, I agree on the background check thing. I mean, I want to see, it seems like we said, it's probably just because Dennis has a sterile criminal history.
Squeaky clean.
Yeah, and so if I want to see one that's not so clean and see what it looks like. Okay, so I think we're all in agreement on that. Let's go to, well, the reports from the functional areas. I don't know that we have a whole lot necessarily. Dennis, do you have anything on your end?
Nope, I'm good so far. Gary?
Nothing.
Tim, nothing from him right now. So, Ryan, back to you.
Response coordination. Other than that, I think I'm going to get you a possible response for the refugee stuff. I'll have something presentable for the Matrix. Now that I came up with that other idea, I kind of want to try to incorporate that before I get you a product, but I probably shouldn't make it so complicated. Anyway, new emerging and significant issues.
It's my understanding that you're going to be taken off from your location shortly. Is that correct?
Yep, before the end of this week to be at in Northern California on the 7th.
Okay, so the next time we talk, you'll be in Northern California.
Correct.
I mean, as far as a conference call.
Yep.
Okay. Just wanted to see if you're still on schedule.
Gary and I might just be talking through the same phone.
Well, hey, not a bad thing.
And maybe John, depending on whenever he gets there. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're going to be there on the 7th. I might be able to get up there for that.
You've got to be back on the 11th, right? Veterans Day?
Yeah, I do. Well, I want to try to be back on. I can't procrastinate too much. I need to write my damn speech.
Well, get your speech done this week, and then can focus on rehearsing it while you're driving.
Sounds good.
And then I'd like to see if Tim. I don't know what Tim's financial state is, but I'd like to. It'd be nice if we get him up there too next week.
His mother lives in Sacramento, so that's an inducement for him. He can come up and see his mother again. He was up there last month, but. At least he's got, you know, two reasons to come up this way.
Sure. Sure. And then, let's see, what other issues do we got? I guess that's all I had. Does anybody else have anything new they want to insert here at the end?
Nope.
I kind of do about that new guy that you were presenting, Diamond.
Yeah.
One other thing that I would like to also remember is, so I'm assuming you have gone out and recruited this guy. It's not like this guy sought you out and is pressing the issue of trying to infiltrate OMB. Like, I understand keeping our guard up and everything, but am I understanding that properly, that you recruited this guy and you're the one that is putting him up? You're kind of sponsoring him?
Well, here's how our relationship came about. You know what? Let me do we want to keep this on the recording, or do we want to close up the meeting and then we can continue to talk?
Well, we might as well just keep going if we're going.
Okay. Tom and I met after I came back from the Bundy Ranch. I started to focus on the state militia projects a lot more. And I was asked by a bunch of different units up here to come help them with their training and as an instructor, and to put together training scenarios and such and events. We even had a few statewide training events where units from all over the state came and participated. Tom was part of the Montana Defense Forces, and he was just someone who got to know everybody on there through social media. And then he offered up his a property that he owns here in about an hour north of Helena for using as a statewide training location. And so the very first statewide event that was put together was hosted by him at his property. No one was very familiar with him. No one knew him personally before that. And surely I've become the most intimately knowledgeable of him since then. Along the lines of what you're getting at is, he was not involved with any local unit or anything like that before that time. He hosted an event that brought a bunch of people from the militia community, and along the lines of what you're saying is, absolutely, he could definitely, if I were a government agent, and I wanted to bring in people like Ryan Payne and other, whatever they want to call us, extremist radicals, into the fold, then it would be very easy to do that by putting together a statewide militia training location and bringing all these people in. And what he has done, I guess, in that sense, is that he has made contacts with every single one of the leadership in the state in that regard. And specifically after that, after a couple of different training events, he came to me and said, you know, of all the units that there are, yours is the tightest. and seems to be the most disciplined and cohesive. And so I would like to be a part of it. And so we brought him in. So what you're alluding to is absolutely possible, and it's even plausible. So
No, I'm not alluding. I'm not the one alluding to that. I'm all for keeping your guard up. I'm saying I'm actually in defense of him, I guess. Like the fact that it's you recruiting somebody versus them seeking you out. But the way you're looking at it, I mean, yeah, so there's all different avenues of approach to infiltrate, I guess you'd say. So that's awesome that you're keeping on that.
He's created, he has definitely, if you were to look at it from that perspective of what someone who wanted to infiltrate Ryan Payne's inner circle, if you wanted to get involved in that inner circle, he has done a fantastic job of doing that. And so it's hard to say. But one of the things that he's found through our local unit is that we're focused on a lot of things like search and rescue, for instance. It was our local unit that just did this search and rescue. We do train tactically, and we do that type of stuff as well, but definitely getting involved with this local unit isn't going to get you privy to any information, we'll put it that way. And if that's what he's found out, and then he never exclaimed interest whatsoever in OMD. So those are conversations that I brought to the table. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that wasn't information that he already wanted. Because if you just like I said before, if you wanted into that network, all you had to do was make the contact and then put yourself forth as a capable part of it. And then eventually you're going to get asked, right? So, yeah, there's that.
Well, I think we need to, you know, get more on the application, need to get background on him. The tactics, as has just been pointed out, could be from either side. What's occurred. And then, you know, the final step will be if we decide to interview him.
Mm-hmm.
And put him on the spot on things. So let's just proceed with the improved application, see if we can get a sample from Tim. He can cross the names and things out, or you can put yours in, Ryan. See if we can get a background check that demonstrates a more thorough search than Squeaky Clean got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to do mine today. Well, I don't know what he's jealous of. The one with the most wins, is it?
Yeah,
or is this golf?
Either way, you know, it's a spectrum thing.
Yeah. Is it golf or bowling? That's the question.
Okay.
I'll do mine today and send it off. But like I said, I know I don't have a record, so I'm sure there's not going to be anything on there, except I know that the terrorist watch list stuff, that I'm on that, so we'll see what that comes back with. But I'd like to see someone who is a criminal and see what their shows. I do have a friend who is a criminal, and he has not expressed a desire to be involved in OMB, but he has expressed dissatisfaction with movement on the local level, and so I have prompted him with the notion of being involved with OMB. He does have, I believe he has a felony in his background, so maybe I'll just get him to fill out one and get it to us and see what it comes up with.
That'd be an interesting test, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is there anything anybody else would... John, did that satisfy your point about Tom?
Yeah, it does. No, I just was kind of tapping on it. Again, if I'm going to be involved in this, I don't know if you guys know this about me, I used to ride with a 1% outlaw motorcycle club, and
me too.
Obviously, it's like they, you know, we're worried about feds or anybody infiltrating, and you got your prospecting period, and you know,
you do a good, thorough check if you want to make sure you're not being infiltrated. You're not just, so I'm going to keep my guard up and, you know, anything I can help to further dig into anybody's background, fine. I got nothing to hide. I'm going to try. I think that just trying to be an open book is going to be what's best. I was let in here. I filled out the application. I sent in all the required or requested documents. But if there's any other questions for me too, I still feel as the newbie, like I'm in, but I feel like I should disclose more to make sure there's no surprises or anything. I don't know if you guys know me well enough. I want you to know me, and I want to know you guys well enough.
With what you just said, what is it that you feel you should disclose?
No, I mean, I don't know. It's just, it's something only the time will build for that bond, that camaraderie, and that understanding or that, because I still don't feel that I can trust. Look, I just came into this today, and then I'm listening to plans of an operation to go and defend a guy only if he's willing to defend himself from being arrested. And, I mean, that's like a big thing to jump into on day one. You know what I'm saying? So it's like my level of trust still isn't even there of all of you guys. I think I trust you, but only time, it's something that only time is going to build for me, and that's going to also be me having to make that trip up north there. I don't know how many hour drive that is. I'm already driving into Southern California right now, but, you know, it would be in my best interest just to drive up there to shake hands with you guys and get to know you on more of a personal level. I was still in the reserves during the Bundy Ranch stuff, and I haven't been active. I haven't done a border op, but I want to go down and do border ops. I want to be active in the community. I want to be active for the greater good of our country. So, and I think this is the right way to do it from everything that I've heard so far. But
yeah, and that's a big one of the reasons too why I think it's good if you and me and Tim are doing that together. As far as the response team is concerned, you know, when we hit the ground, the idea is that the response coordinator has a logistics guy or girl, communications, PR, intelligence and operations, all there, so that the work can be, delegated out. Aside from just one guy taking care of all of his tasks. Essentially, I was handling all those tasks most of the time just because the knowledge, the people with knowledge weren't there. And as they started to show up, started delegating those tasks a little bit more. But decentralizing the tasks is kind of the idea. And just like you said, the more that we can build a cohesion amongst ourselves, and especially in things like training and actual, that's the beauty of the border, isn't it? Because there's an active, hot environment that we can conduct real world operations where we're making a difference. And at the same time, we're building cohesion amongst ourselves for the greater purpose, which is not just the defense of the border and those communities and our country in that national defense aspect of it, but the defense from tyranny.
Awesome. Well, and I don't want to drag this out any longer than we've already done, and I know this meeting's probably gone a lot longer than they normally do, probably because of me being brought up to speed. So as of right now, I'll plan on being up there for the 7th, was it? Man, today's the 1st already. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So, if nobody else has anything that they want to bring up, let me ask that. Does anybody have anything they want to bring up before we close out here? Okay, so I'm going to keep my – now that I've made so many comments, I'm going to keep them super short. John, welcome to the team. sir. And Gary and Dennis, thank you for your continued efforts. And let's try to make another productive week here. We need to, because we have the rollout of the, what we want to be the rollout of the website and such after next Sunday's meeting, then we need to put some particular effort into getting the website up and running, which will be pressuring Mike. He seemed to think that he should be able to get it done here near the beginning of this week. So we're going to put some pressure on that. And then other than that, I don't think that we added any individual tasks for John. So definitely by the time we hit next Sunday's meeting, we need to at least get him something to do. And with that, I'm sure it'll come. There's going to be plenty to do. So with that, thank you, gentlemen, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.
Okay.